Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures down 21.75. Just, well, the we were up Friday. We actually hung in there Friday. We weren't exactly off, but we were like even and had a feeling this week might not be as good, so starting out, and then it is not. Well, that doesn't mean I sold futures coming in a weekend. Why didn't I, Manny? I don't quite get it, but, yeah, we've had, issues, the Hong Kong thing, the trade thing, the tariffs actually did start this weekend, the ones that were supposed to start on September 1st. We had another mass shooting in Texas, not that that affects the market at all, but, I don't know what exactly it affects, Manny. I know we got the boat blowing up. We've got all kinds of stuff happening. None of it all that good, do we? Cubs look like Scott Toff for a couple of days and managed to come back yesterday and do a little something. But I can't say it was the nice weather. Let's put it that way. Labor Day weekend.
Great weather. 75, sunny, low humidity for the most part. Yeah, Cubs were great on Friday and then for whatever reason just went away on Saturday and Sunday. And then they bounced back yesterday with a nice win. But the Cardinals keep winning. So they went from three back to one back, and now it's back to three again.
I would say that the people that know a lot about this, you and Josh and everybody, always, I don't know that anybody thought the Cardinals had the staying power, but it sure looks like that. Did they get some a couple of young pitchers all of a sudden pitching better? I haven't seen them, and they haven't played the Cubs in a while.
Well, their big acquisition was they signed Paul Goldschmidt, who's one of the best first basemen in baseball and has been for the last 10 years. They brought him in, and that added a big bat in the middle of the lineup, and he got off to kind of a slow start. I think he was surprised to get traded, and the Diamondbacks listener, our Arizona listeners, are very familiar with him. Longtime Diamondback, very good player, all-star every year. He was always the guy that was just ahead of Rizzo and in the stats and would always be the starter, and Rizzo could never get by him. Well, he got out to a slow start, and the Cardinals kind of sputtered, and then he's heated it up along with some other guys. They got Molina back healthy, and he's been good, and yeah, their pitching's been okay. Or better than okay. It's been good. And they're playing really well. They've won 10 out of 12, and I think they've won something like 20 of their last 26 or something like that. And they've really came out of nowhere. They were 4.5 back a few weeks ago of the Cubs.
Well, they won a horrible road trip.
Right, yeah. They went to the West Coast and got swept by, I think, the Dodgers and somebody else, maybe the Diamondbacks. Really didn't play well out west, which a lot of teams don't when you're coming from the central time zone. And plus the Dodgers are really good. And yeah, it looked like they were done, and they've just been really good. And granted, they've played an easier part of their schedule, beating up a lot on the Reds and stuff like that. But
How come the Cubs can't seem to beat up on the Reds?
The Reds have really played well against the Cubs this year. I don't know why. The Cubs have beat up on everyone else at home and just really struggled on the road. But the Reds have played them tough no matter where they're playing.
Well, yeah, it seems like whatever the Cubs hitting issues are that they supposedly fixed in spring training, they sort of didn't. Plus they tried to bunt a couple of times and were miserable at it. I mean, they really just can't execute any, maybe it's mental, they don't want to, or something. And then you've got Hayward, which has been their big star all year, is what, 0-for-24?
Yeah, he had two big walks yesterday that started a couple rallies, but if you've watched the last few games, first of all, since he's been put in the leadoff position, which I think he is probably their best option at leadoff, but since he's been in the leadoff hole, he's been terrible. And he just hasn't been hitting, I think he's been batting like 150 in the leadoff spot. But Joe's riding it out, hoping that he can get back to what he was, a month ago when he's batting in the 5 or 6th hole. And because he's a guy that gets on base, he's got gap-to-gap power. But if you watched over the weekend, he got robbed of about 5 hits.
Yeah.
I mean, even yesterday, he smokes the ball to the warning track, and the guy makes a spectacular catch in left field. And there's been a bunch of lineouts. At least he's still taking his walks. He's really struggled in the leadoff spot, but I do like him there because I don't think there's anyone else on the roster that's better suited. Unless Ben Zobrist comes back and is old Ben Zobrist, which I doubt that's going to happen.
Where are you going to put him?
Yeah.
Second base?
Well, you'd put him at second, especially with Baez nursing his thumb. Like yesterday, I'm surprised they played Robel Garcia and not Zobrist. But maybe Zobrist isn't ready.
How's he getting ready on the bench?
I agree. I don't know. I was surprised. And Garcia was a big-time rally killer yesterday because Castellanos, Rizzo, whatever, were getting on base ahead of him, and then he would come up. He was batting fifth inexplicably ahead of Schwarber, and I realized that he's a switch hitter, so that Joe wanted the right-left thing. But and he came up 3 different times with guys on base and just swung and missed pitches by a foot every time.
Yeah, it was like by a foot.
And he just has – I really like the kid as a prospect. He's just turned 26. He's got some power, but his swing is so long that big league pitching, I mean, once they see that you can't be short and quick, you're dead. And he looked really bad.
Yeah, plus
Zobrist could have played yesterday.
Well, they keep thinking that other kid's going to come around, a little lefty, and I don't see where that's at. I know that he's got speed, so they're dying to get him in there somewhere, but I don't think he's that good. The second baseman.
Tony Kemp? Yeah. I mean, the Astros cut him for a reason, and yeah, I think he's brings a lot of energy. He can play multiple positions. He's got some speed. But if you can't get on base, it really doesn't matter how fast you are.
No.
You can't steal first, as they say.
He's like the guy last year. Only the guy last year was faster.
Yeah, and even a worse hitter.
Yeah, well, but I don't know. I just the whole group, you have to be able to execute at this level. And even Hendricks, who's usually pretty good at everything, asked him to bunt, and he popped the thing up. And it's like the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, first one he bunted foul, and then the second one he bunted foul pop up for an out.
Yeah,
and he's usually one of their more reliable bunters. Lester's really good at bunting. Quintana has gotten a little bit better. Hendricks is usually good, but he didn't get it down yesterday. I mean, you expect your pitchers to get it down, but they're not going to get it down every time.
No,
so I don't get too worried about that. But it is annoying if you ask an everyday player to get a bunt down and they can't do it.
Well, I just. The one thing I've my continual, not criticism because the guy's a good manager, but for somebody who's coached as long as I have, not at that level, of course, I have much more, and I could be totally wrong on this, I have much more respect for people's spot in the batting order in the sense that whether you get help, don't get help, and how that's why it doesn't surprise me that Haywood, who's doing pretty well in the second or third hole, all of a sudden doesn't get the same pitches in the leadoff spot. Because the one thing a pitcher can do when you're leading off is do whatever he wants to you. There's nobody on first. You're not getting an extra fastball.
Yeah, it's just once a game, though.
Well, I understand that. But, I mean, you look at the careers of Ryan Sandberg and the difference in his average and his power numbers when he had a decent leadoff hitter ahead of him when he didn't. You're right. It's once a game, but maybe still you end up with your. Let's put it this way: there's differences in spots in the batting order. I really believe there are because in a lot of situations there's people on base. There's stuff that happens in front of you. If you got a fast guy ahead of you, it makes a big difference. Look at Haywood is now in that spot. He's stealing. He's a threat to steal. He was 1-for-2 yesterday. Now I got to believe that helps the second batter. Doesn't help Haywood, right? If they think he might go because these guys are not going to. They're not going to throw that ball in the dirt. And when are they going to start putting you or me out there instead of this closer?
Well, he's definitely not been good in non-save situations. That's clear.
I was listening to your buddy A-Rod last
in slave situations, I think he's 13 out of 15, which is pretty solid.
Yeah, but every one of them's an adventure.
But not worth... He definitely hasn't been sharp. I mean, he's basically getting through his spring training right now. And you're hoping that he's going to turn it on here in September, but he has not been very impressive.
No. But the situation.
What did A-Rod say?
Well, he was saying it. He says that the thing that your meatball, the thing you should never throw in his mind, is the 3-2 curveball for a strike. He goes, you can throw it earlier in the count when people aren't expecting it. He says, you can throw it in dirt and get people to strike out with two strikes. He said, but if you put the, if all of a sudden that thing tumbles down the middle of the zone and doesn't do anything with three and two, that's the ball that people lose. That's exactly what he did to Yelich. It was a curveball that just tumbled through the middle, and the ball could still be passing the shuttle.
Oh yeah, it was like 430 some feet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting there going, the last thing I want to do is pay attention to A-Rod, but the guy knows his baseball, and he goes, the batter's greatest dream is a tumbling curveball on like three and two, where the guy's trying to throw it for a strike, and all if it could be throw it for the, in the dirt, and you don't know if it's going to be down or a strike, and you go digging for it, because that's one thing, but. Or if it's the first pitch you throw, maybe, you know, but you can't throw that 3-2 for a strike, because if it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, it just comes walking down the middle down Main Street, which is what
I would argue that you should never hang a curveball down the middle in any count. You just should never hang a curveball down the middle.
But his point was if you throw a fastball or even a slider, even if it's not correct, it's still harder to hit than a tumbling curveball.
That's definitely true, yeah.
Anyway, but I mean...
But big league hitters, there's no easier pitch to hit than a slider that doesn't slide or a curveball that doesn't curve or a, you know, any sort of breaking ball that just hangs down the middle and just spins. And JD calls it a cement mixer.
Yeah.
That's on a tee because there's no velocity, and if there's no movement, I mean, that ball just gets murdered.
Yep.
Like, no matter what. You know, he made a big mistake to the best hitter in the game, and he made him pay.
So just when you're digging through all the stuff last night for the show and you're seeing the markets down and I've got all kinds of stuff here I'm going to go over with Joel regarding all these technical things now that are showing people that we're going to go way down or something. You know, I don't want to necessarily buy all this technical stuff, but there's like three articles we'll sneak through that may or may not. Of course, you know, the day after we're supposed to go way down technically. If we go up, everybody says, well, of course, you should have known we were going up, right? So I get this one out of the blue, and I don't know what to do about this one. Plus, I'm not so sure who's doing the inspecting necessarily, but they claim now that how many people have plastic fibers in their poop. Nobody seems to know where people are getting them. Somehow or another, there's... Whatever they do to analyze, must be that thing you do in the mail so you don't have to do the colostomy. Not the colostomy. What do they call that thing? Where the test when you get older. They check and see if you're okay from the bottom up.
The prostate exam?
No, it's the one where you got to drink all the stuff and whatever. Tiny bits of plastic may be getting into our bodies via the air we breathe and the food we eat. And of course, if you breathe it in, how is it getting in your digestive system? It's like ambient. Research to examine here's their job. Was to examine stool samples from 8 people from diverse geographic locations, found that all contained bits of plastic, according to a report in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Now, what do you do about that, Manny? The small prospective case series showed that various microplastics were present in human stool, and no sample was free of microplastics. Wrote a team of scientists. Larger studies are needed to validate the findings. Moreover, research on the origins of the microplastic ingested by humans, potential intestinal absorption, and effects on human health is urgently needed.
And where's this article from?
I don't know, sometime on Yahoo. Well, I'm sure Linda Carroll from Reuters. So there you go. I will say
that's
this.
You
know what I have done, though? But I'm not exactly Mr. Healtharoo, but I have gone... I don't know if there's probably something wrong with this, too, but I stopped drinking water out of plastic bottles. I'm drinking, like, LaCroix or something like that now. Because I have a feeling it's really cheap plastic and it gets into you. I don't think it's going to make any difference at my age, but I got to do something, right?
So you're done with drinking bottled water out of a plastic bottle?
Right.
Yeah, I don't drink that as much.
Not like I'll never happen again, but yeah. If I had my choice, I'm drinking one of LaCroix or something. Just saying.
Yeah, I definitely drink a lot of LaCroix, the carbonated, what do you call it, just carbonated water, I guess?
Well, yeah, it's
And you can get it flavored or flavorless. Yeah. I prefer the flavorless.
I've never seen the flavorless.
Yeah, the flavorless is great. It's the light blue cans.
Well, that's really? I didn't know they had that.
In fact, one of my favorite things to do is to do a flavorless and put a little lemon wedge in there. And it's,
I thought you were going to say vodka.
It's heaven. Well, I do that too. But and that's really good, actually. But I drink. But the only thing about those is I don't feel... I'm still thirsty after I drink those.
Yeah,
so it must not be real water. I don't know what it is.
They don't do the job thirst-wise for some reason.
So what is it?
I don't know. But
is it fake water? I don't get it.
I just think I think that the plastics are using leach is my guess on those cheap bottles.
I think you're right. I think that's possible anyway.
Here we don't want to. Do we have the market down? I suppose we could talk about these. They're talking about data is coming to investors from every angle with so-called recession indicators. Flashing sign of an economic slowdown. Go through some of this when Kenny's on. But, you know, it's interesting, Maddie, that because we have the interest rates down where they are, I'm going to say that I've had 3 to 4 to 5, you know, good friends of mine that I don't manage their stuff because mostly their stuff is in 401ks, you know, a government thing or something. And so they really can't, you know, they can't move it, which is fine. And they can't really hedge it either. Most of your 401ks, I mean, so it's not like I'm giving these guys a shameless plug for me to manage their stuff, because I can hedge it, you know, and do things with it. That's what I'm good at. But if you're in a 401k, you're either pretty much in or out, because you really, I think you have to scratch long bonds off the table right about now, because they're paying so little. And I can't imagine me putting somebody in a 10-year bond for, you know, 1.5. I don't think that's such a good idea, but anyway, so the but I've had these people like say, "Hey, come on, I'll buy an adult beverage. I'll show you my stuff." And it's so interesting, Maddie, when you talk to people. And I don't know, one of these days, maybe you'll sort of get this technique, which you really have to have in any kind of a business where people are talking to you about whether it's their finances, whether it's their health, whatever it is. You really have to listen more than you talk, which I know for people. People think, I can't believe the chief ever listens to what he talks. But anyway, but people sit down and they'll say, you know, I got, pick a number, 800,000, a million, million and a half in this 401k, and I've done exceptionally well with it. I'm in all these, you know, I'm pretty much in the market. I don't have any cash. Cash isn't paying anything right. And I don't really have anything bonds, because bonds aren't paying anything right. And, you know, I'm getting really nervous about it. I mean, things seem like they're slowing down. I mean, this China thing is not making things better. Everybody's talking about recession and God knows what. And they'll say, you know, and they'll say, what do you think I can do? I said, well, you don't really have any ability in here to hedge. So you're just going to have to shift from one fund to another. I said, if you had individual stocks, maybe you could go down the road, maybe, with some of those stocks that are like, you know, the shorts and double shorts and stuff. I said, but those things are really horrible products. And I wouldn't really recommend those either. You know, you have no real place to go except pull some of the money out, 20%, 25%, 30%, and just put it in cash. But cash doesn't make any money. I know, but it's not losing anything either. You know, so you have this discussion, and inevitably it ends up with, so you're bearish on the market. I didn't say that. You said that. You said you are nervous. You said you've been riding this horse for essentially 9 years, and you see the tone changing, and you don't want to do the U-turn. U-turn is a trading floor euphemism. You rode a stock from 5 to 60 and back to 5 and never did anything. Never sold, never bought a put, never sold a call, never did anything. So then the discussion comes into, well, why am I bearish? And I'm like, I'm not bearish. I'm just seeing the signs that if you look at the stuff going on, it doesn't look like 5 years ago. And by the way, if it looked like 5 years ago, you wouldn't have called this meeting, right? So... I'm going to say, Maddie, not one of these people, not one, has pulled the trigger. And even taken 50 grand out of a million out and put it in cash. I said, what's the problem? Take a quarter of it out, put it in cash. Yeah, but I'm not going to make money on that. You just said you're not sure you're going to make money on it anyway. You think it might go down. Yeah, but everybody says that if you pull money out of the market, like, you're an idiot. I said, don't listen to everybody. I said, if you're uncomfortable, I mean, if you have $1 million, then you leave 750 in the market. By anybody's historical stretch, you're bullish as hell. Yeah, but what about the other 250? What are we doing here? Why are we having this conversation? You're the one who told me that you are concerned, and I said, well, if you're concerned, this is the only option that's left to you, because you can't do options. And now you're telling me how you can't do it. Well, yeah, but what if I, what if the market goes up and I've got $250 in cash? You still got $750 in there. That's a lot. Oh man, I can't do that. Okay. So I think a lot of the hand wringing that you hear in a lot of this, stuff you hear, well, people are bearish, people are this. Man, it's all bull bleep. It's all bull bleep. When I say that, there was a guy that came into a seminar years and years ago. And I used to, this was before 2007. So it was a while ago. And the dude says, I usually say, okay, when we've had the seminars in the office here, I say, why is everybody here? Blah, blah, blah. How'd you hear about us? You know, this kind of thing. Trying to get some kind of feel for who's in the room. And one guy goes, I'm here to learn how to be short this market. Okay, why are you bearish? I'm so bearish I can taste it. Okay. I said, well then, what do you have? You got like a lot of puts and you're short stacks? Well, no. That's what I'm learning, want to learn to do. I said, so, but do you have a 401k? Well, yeah. And I said, well, what's that invested in? Well, that's my retirement money. It's not what I asked. What's that invested in? Well, it's all stock. But that's not my retirement money. I said, okay, so you got a big 401k. You're bearish as hell. You're not only full balls to the wall long, you bought last week. What do you mean? I said, well, your paycheck took a chunk out for your 401k last week, right? Well, yeah. I said, and what do those guys do with it? I said, did it go into a stock fund? Yeah. So they bought stock. Well, probably. So let me get this straight. Your bearish as all get out. You're 100% long, and you're buying more. Why do you look at it that way? Well, how else could I look at it? I'm saying a lot of people, you really need to, I mean, I don't know if it ever make any sense, but nobody, with all the wall of worry people are talking about here, it hasn't translated into any action by a lot of people. Now, some money came out of funds last week and have for a little while, but you don't know if they're putting them in ETFs or wherever it's going. I mean, so you never really know if it's coming out of the market. Or it could be going individual stacks. I'm saying that there's, if we do go down, the amount of people that are, quote, worried because they didn't do anything are going to get hurt. And it has nothing to do with me giving market advice, because I'm not. I'm just saying, if you are worried, you need to do something. And not just if somebody recommends what to do, say, what's wrong with you, or are you bearish? I mean, because people don't, I'm going to say that if the market goes down, not any one of the people that have talked to me about it will lost one penny less because we had a conversation. It's pretty scary. When you think about it. And then we come back, we're going to talk to Joel Uncannon, we got Kenny Polcari. We also went through some of these, all these numbers that some people are thinking are mounting up to recession. I don't know what they are or they aren't, but the numbers I'm talking about, this is a precursor. We're talking about, interest rate, the yield curve, obviously, which we've been talking about. But then there's GDP growth is slowing, corporate profits are slowing. Manufacturing contraction was, the PMI was under 50 for the first time in a long time last week. This Cass Freight Index, which people have used forever, it's the amount of freight shipments, has been down 3 months in a row, pretty heavy, like 5% a month. Copper prices in the crapo, which is an indicator of building and so forth. So all that stuff is sort of happening. Now, whether it's just a blip, that could be too. But we'll see that. We come back, we have Mr. Joel Uncannon. We have S&P Futures still down 23. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland. He's Mr. Matt Weber. He's training Miss Angelica Vlasenko. Leica for short. Couldn't do Angelica Vlasenko. All morning, that would be tough. We've got S&P futures down 19.25. That is a terrific name. It just takes a while. What do you think, man?
I agree.
It's not like Matt Weber or Tom Howell. You know,
no,
easy
no.
It's like that. But S&P futures down 19.25, and NASDAQ futures down 55. Individual stocks, leader of the pack in the Dow is Boeing down $7 as United has pushed off their estimated use of the 737 MAX to like December 19th, which is not what people were looking for. They were looking for this thing to come back before that. Apple down 225, but it's still at 206, so it's still over 200. It still hasn't, like I said, that huge of a hit from the Chinese situation, like maybe some people think it would, but it hasn't so far. Manny, my machine is acting up yet again. You want to do Trevor Weather Sports?
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty nice start, actually, on the area expressways, but we do have storms rolling in, so we anticipate high traffic volumes for the morning rush as these torrential downpours begin and last throughout the morning. So keep that in mind as you're heading out. But right now, not looking too bad. We have a slowdown on the Kennedy out near O'Hare. The early week business traffic that we tend to see at the beginning of every week. But otherwise, looking good coming in on the Kennedy. No issues on the Eisenhower or Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good as well. Off the expressways, we have a couple of accidents. 71st Street at Cottage Grove, there is a crash on the south side. And then out in the northwest suburbs, out near Carroll Stream, Bloomingdale Road at US 20, there is an accident. But everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, as I mentioned, severe thunderstorms early, and then rain later on. We will be hot and humid when it's not raining, a high of 85 degrees. Right now it is overcast, drizzling, and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 110 today. Right now it's clear and 87. In sports, Cubs snapped their two-game skid, taking care of the Mariners 5-1. The Cubs went 24 straight innings dating back to Friday afternoon without scoring a run before they erupted for a five spot late in the game yesterday. So they snapped that losing skid and are hopefully back on track. They'll take on the Mariners in the series finale of their brief two-game set tonight at Wrigley. White Sox were blown out by the Indians 11-3. White Sox have dropped seven straight games as they're just playing out the schedule and not playing it out very well. Diamondbacks are hanging on to their slim wild card hopes. They blew out the Padres 14-7. So as we take a look at the standings here on a Tuesday morning, the first standings look in September, so we're officially in the home stretch. White Sox are 60-77. As I mentioned, they dropped seven straight. They're 25 games behind first place Minnesota in third place in the AL Central. Somehow they're still well ahead of the Royals and Tigers, though, who are just absolutely horrific. The Cubs are 74-63. They're just 5-5 in their last 10, though. They're three games behind first place St. Louis, four games ahead of the third place Brewers. The Diamondbacks, as I mentioned, playing pretty good ball. They've won 7 out of 10 after yesterday's win. They're 71-67, four games above, 18 games behind the Dodgers. But if you look at the wild card standings, the Cubs are still in the playoff picture. In fact, they're 3.5 behind the Washington Nationals, but 2.5 up on the Phillies and 3.5 up on the Diamondbacks. So the Cubs are holding on to that second wild card spot right now in the National League. They would play the Nationals in Washington in that one-game wild card extravaganza, if you will, if that were to start today. But still a month left in the season, and they're obviously have their sights set on the Cardinals. They still play St. Louis seven more times before the season ends. Lastly, Notre Dame opened up their season and took care of Louisville. It was a tight game early, but the Irish pulled away in the second half, winning 35-17. Chief.
Wow. Guess what the over-under was. I mean, the point spread.
I don't know.
18.
We're all right on the button.
Right on the button. It's.
I would have guessed right around 18 or 19. So, yeah, that's how Vegas guys are good, man.
Yeah, they are. They definitely are. Dax down 43.4%. FTSE down 25.3%. Kick around down 25, that's point five. So not all like going over in Europe. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei actually up 4 points, call that flat. Shanghai up 6, 0.2%. Hang Seng down 98.4. It's not much going on there. Bond yields 1.49. Wow, under 1.5. One minus 0.72. Japan minus 0.27. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing all right. Market in the crapo. What's going on? Did you expect that, or?
We've been talking about the trading range, the spider, the 293 area, the S&P, the 2940 area. We kissed it on Friday, so that's been. I mean, anybody can look at a daily chart, and that, you know, that's the top of the trading range, and El Presidente can get a little tougher. We're at the top or the bottom of the trading range. We're at the bottom of the range. He has to be a little bit softer, so. Trading range here in the market, trading down today. We'll see if we can recover.
I'm listening here because I don't know what the hell she's talking about. This lady, Lizzie Gurdus from Fast Money. Evidently, even though I've never seen her on Fast Money. Not that she hasn't been on there. This is a huge selling thing they're talking about. Something called a, what the hell's a pattern? Some kind of a megaphone. Or something like this?
Oh, they're talking about a trading pattern, the megaphone trading pattern.
Yeah, and no, there's a. They think there's actually a bullish little piece in the middle of the megaphone pattern that if it doesn't break through, it has been forming since mid 2018. The formation made during times of heightened volatility is also known to some as a broadening wedge. digging deeper. The new element forming within the megaform is ascending triangle. So they're claiming if we happen to break out of the thing, it could be bullish, but if not, it's a very bearish trend. What the hell is she talking about?
Wow, that helps us out a lot here, Chief.
Yeah, I know.
But, I mean, technical analysis, you know, I talk about it a lot. I like to follow it. But, you know, as of late, you know, Twitter, I've mentioned this before, you know, the tweets, the trade war, these things. I mean, you can have your levels of technical analysis, but right now this market is free to go in either direction. I wouldn't call it the megaphone pattern or the wedge. I think you've established clear resistance on the upside in the market, and I think that'll be a top of the trading range we could hold quite some time, maybe even through the election.
What do you make? There's one other article. I'm reading this stuff last night. I go, good thing my buddy Joel's on. He has answers all these questions.
Sure.
This is from Maggie Fitzgerald. This is also a CNBC writer. Some of these CNBC writers are pretty good, I think. And she summarizes basically whether or not we're going to a recession. I guess people now pin the risk of the recession, you know, way up higher than it was 6 months ago. But basically she's running down this list of all kind of happening together. The inverted yield curve, the GDP growth slowing, corporate profits slowing, manufacturing contraction, which they've got is kind of a big one, under 50 for the first time in a while. This is one I've followed for a real long time. You know, not remember traded off the darn thing, so please don't. This Cass Freight Index, shipments fell 5.9. I didn't realize it was this bad. 5.9% in July, following a 5.3% decline in June and a 6% drop in May. That's like 15% in 3 months. That's a lot.
That is. I mean, is that, you know, can that be attributed, you know, to the tariffs and the trade wars and
probably
you know,
a lot
going
of it,
back and forth?
I think a lot of it has to do with coal shipments too.
I don't know, Chief. So everyone's convinced we're going in a, you know, an all-out recession, so why don't we quit talking about the recession and talk about the impending, depression that's coming up. I mean, everyone's already made their conclusion that we are going to inverted yield curve is predicted it. The other things, I mean, the GDP growth, I'm just looking for 1.5%, 2%. I don't see us falling off a cliff, and I don't see us going up to 4%. I think the numbers previously or from last week confirm that. So, I don't know. What's going on in Chicago? What happens you look out the window? They still building there? They still doing things? They're doing them here in Detroit. That's nothing slowing down here.
We clearly are. That's one of my, you know, Joel, my biggest concern. When I look at these numbers, I don't buy any of these numbers that they give us. I think somehow or another, I don't know, as you know, I think the inflation numbers are all screwed up. But
correct.
And once that happens, a lot of the rest of them sort of follow. So what I do, I zero in on individual people at various stages of the economy in terms of whether they're $50,000 people, whether they're getting health insurance, whether or not. And I try and assess as best I can without digging into their numbers how well they're doing. And I honestly believe that half the people have never come out of the recession. I mean, The article that got me the worst was the one last week by the lady at CNBC that said that even if you have a median job, which means you're, you know, a 56,000 family, if you get health insurance from the place you're working for, and I know this happened at PTI, that you're, the part you have to contribute to over the years, even if you quote have insurance with your company, the part you have to contribute to, the extra $200 a month or whatever, plus the deductible, is greater than the raises you've made over that period for the average person. So how does that person break out of a recession when there's no more take-home pay?
No, rising health care costs is something that you've noted in the past. But you look at it from that perspective, and no, a lot of people haven't recovered from the downturn.
And here's another, I think, real flaw in the inflation numbers is most of the cost of education. Now, clearly, you can look at the University of Michigan, you can look at Notre Dame, you look at Northwestern, and say they're totally out of control. I mean, if you put them in any sort of a CPI calculator from 20, 30, 40, pick a number years ago, they're double what they ought to be. But the other sneaky part, though, Joel, is in communities that have a good public school system, they've gone up even more. It's all in the property taxes, which they don't count. So, or in any kind of other kind of tax, a sales tax, whatever. So when your CPI, when your people don't count taxes and that the taxes are paying for the education, it's all a big goat bleep, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, very understated. If I mean, that's what people are paying for, the areas they're paying for, the education and the schools. If the property taxes are going up and they're not being included, then that's definitely a flaw. Just real quick, sports here, not super impressed with the Michigan outing here. They're going to have to play a heck of a lot better on both sides of the ball to beat some of the good teams. And Notre Dame didn't look too bad last night.
Well, they did not look like they're ready to go to Georgia.
No, that's going to be tough. SEC, I think they're going to continue to dominate. Tua looked good. Clemson looked good. So we could be singing the same tune this year with the big boys, you know, Clemson, Bama. But anyways, go Blue. Yep. We got Army on Saturday.
Joel, did you see that the Pac-10 is 0-10 against their last 10 games against the SEC? That tells you something.
SC, USC lost their starting quarterback to the ACL injury, right?
Yeah, that's not good. All right, bud, take care of yourself.
Talk to you next week.
SP Futures down 19. NASDAQ Futures down 56. They actually come back a little bit. Come back with Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, just Matt Weber on the board. with his assistant, Leica. I won't go through the full name. We also have Mr. Kenny Poker. SP Futures now back down 21. We had snuck back to being only down 18.5, but we're back down over 20. Nasdaq Futures down 64, which is nearing kind of their lows a little bit too. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. I'm down here in South Florida. I prepared all weekend for the arrival of Dorian, who never came. So it's a little bit unsettling at the moment just because, you know, you're half in and half out. What was closed, what was open, what office and buildings were closed. So, but it's okay. You know, we kind of, I think we skirted the issue down here in South Florida.
So what are you going to do with 8 years worth of batteries?
I have to say, I did not buy
people go buy batteries, and then they buy flashlights and bulbs. And what do they do with the batteries? Use them for, like, their adult toys and the thing doesn't show up, or what?
I don't know. I didn't think adult toys came with batteries anywhere. I thought you just plugged them in and they lasted.
I don't know if you want the plug-in, Ken, you know, depending. So Kenny, you know, you look like you're kind of a church-going man. So say you were a church-going kind of guy, and all of a sudden, yeah, not only did a hurricane come by your place, but sits over your friggin' house for 4 days. You think you're doing the right job in church, like those poor people in the Bahamas?
Can you imagine? I can't imagine. Just sat there.
It's still there. It hasn't moved yet, has it?
It's really, it's unbelievable to me that it kind of stalled right over those islands. I mean, those poor people just got devastated.
Yeah, I mean, of course, how many times can a house get knocked down? I mean, it's down. But you can't exactly dig a shelter in the Bahamas, can you? You're in the ocean if you do, don't you?
Yeah, no, I don't think they get bases with shelters. No, that doesn't work.
There's not exactly higher ground. I mean, where do you go?
I don't know, but it's really, it's unbelievable when you, you know, today you'll probably see even more pictures of the devastation just because yesterday, you know, it was still there, right? You couldn't really see the aftermath of what happened. But I guess we're going to see that today.
Well, this thing is going to be a royal pain in the behind, but I had visions, Kenny, when I saw the first thing. I mean, you know, you and I aren't exactly experts, but we've seen enough of these things, and we've been, you know, we've sort of been talking about them for how many years either one of us has been on the air, but I had this vision of that thing whacking across Florida, doing huge damage, and then reforming in the Gulf and hitting somewhere else. I mean, at least it's not going to do that.
Yeah, which I don't think it's, I mean, it's not going to do that at all. That kind of fear went away.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, you know, and I've never quote unquote really lived through a hurricane, a South Florida hurricane. I mean, the worst I experienced was Sandy up in New York, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, you know, we've been preparing since last week for this, and we had to evacuate where we lived on Sunday afternoon because it was a mandatory evacuation. And so we moved out to Wellington, which is just east, west, about 20 miles inland west, to kind of ride it out. But yet, you know, after all that and all that preparation, thank God it's kind of veering northward and it's staying out at the ocean. So, I guess it's all worth it, but it is a little bit, I will say, it's a little bit nerve wracking, but people down in South Florida that have been here for a while, you know, they just go, look, you just got to prepare for it. You batten down the hatches. Most of the structures down here are the newest structures, certainly of the hurricane proof windows and building structures and all that. So people weren't necessarily panicked here. You know, if it had hit us head on the way it was going to hit us, I'm not sure that they wouldn't have been dead.
I drove through that homestead somewhat after that happened. Well, first of all, as weird as it may seem, my aunt, this is years ago, her father retired down there, right? So he dies, and she's got the place rented. So I went down there. This must have been like I was on spring break or something. That's how long ago this was.
Yeah.
She goes, you got to go down and check out the house. And I go, now, why would I have to do that? But this was back at a time where nephews did what their aunts told them to do. So I drive down there. God, Kenny, the place was I don't want to use a Trump term, but these houses are just, you know, we're talking about 2x4s, plywood sides painted. And you know, every washing machine you ever owned is still on the porch, and the cars you ever owned are still in the driveway kind of place. And I'm going,
I think that's true. And I think that was, you know, in fact, what Homestead was like then.
Yeah.
I've not been to Homestead since. I don't know what it's like now, but I think a lot of it were those structures that were not hurricane proof or hurricane ready. Certainly there was a lot of mobile home parks in that part that were certainly not hurricane proof. So that was devastating. But, you know, parts of Florida today, are much different. You know, out here in Wellington where I am, I mean, they're very solid concrete structures, hurricane, you know, category 4 and category 5 hurricane proof windows. A lot of the windows out here were not even boarded up because they're those hurricane strength windows, which I think is actually amazing. But
yeah, but Kenny, you guys are,
you know, where I live down on Palm Beach Island, you know, I'm just on one side is the ocean, on the other side is the intercoastal. You know, I had to pull those storm shutters shut. I had to turn everything down. And it's not so much because I'm up in the fourth story of a building. So I'm not worried about flooding, but you're worried about loss of electricity because once you lose your electricity, you got no air conditioning. The humidity and the temperature rises, you'd suffocate.
Kenny, you guys are like way too close to, things that bite and slither along the ground that when you get so much water or they're not exactly sure which is land and which isn't. I don't want any of those guys, any of those things coming to my house, the snakes or the crocodiles or anything like that. Just saying. By the way, real quick story, and we'll talk about the market. But there's this one lady, I was a friend of mine a long time ago, she used to listen to the show, I don't know if she's still alive, but she worked for, Pritzker, has some very high-end, they used to call them nursing homes, convalescent care type of thing or whatever. And they had one on the Gulf side. And, they were convinced this hurricane was coming right for it, so they rented like every ambulance they could find, and they took all the patients over to the Atlantic side.
Yeah.
And damn if the thing didn't come around, hit from the Gulf side, cross right where they were, and missed the place they moved people from, and whacked right into the place they moved people to.
Yeah.
Yeah, how scary.
Yeah.
So, all right, with the markets going into crapo, we've got everybody on CNBC writing about either technical formations that are saying we're topping out here big time, and then we've got other people talking about freight. I was surprised though at these the amount of freight loadings, how much they're down, and then the manufacturing index. Some stuff does seem to be slowing down. Okay, I was looking for the good news here, and I'm struggling to find it.
Yeah, some stuff, and I don't think you're going to find it today, quite honestly, because I think what, you know, kind of the broader picture is exactly those new tariffs that were imposed over the weekend by Trump, as well as the retaliatory ones by China. And so, you know, all this suggests is that this trade war conversation is no closer to being resolved than it was last week, last year, last month, whenever. And so I think the market's now more preparing for the extended, the, you know, I think it has been, but I think now it's really preparing for an extended trade war, and I think you're going to see the market become more volatile. We've talked about it. Certainly August is volatile. September can typically be a very volatile month, as can October be. And so I think there's a lot of kind of nervousness and angst ahead, which doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you should sell everything and run into the basement and bat down the hatches and not participate. Just means you have to be aware of kind of what's going on and then continue to build a portfolio that will take advantage and be defensive in some areas, but also take advantage of some of the dislocation happening in other areas, right?
Do you think that we might be getting, I won't say a total redo, because I don't know what that would mean. Do you think we're starting to reach the point where people are not counting on the Fed to keep asset prices, I'm going to say, when I say artificially high, I don't know if they're 2% high or 5 or 10, but most people think that was their intention.
Right. So I think what's going to happen is the Fed may continue to try to cut rates to blunt any move, but I think what's ultimately going to happen is the market's going to get numb to the Fed move, and the market's going to end up, the Fed's not going to be able to stop or prevent. It may blunt it a little bit, but the market's going to do what it's going to do. And no matter what the Fed does, I don't think that's going to necessarily stop a correction or stop a move lower in the market.
Kenny, we only have like 20 seconds. I spotted the M2 growing in the last 13 weeks at 9.6%, higher than any time since 2009. One question, why?
Listen, I'm not an economist. I wouldn't answer that question. You probably know better than I do.
Well, I know it's awful. It's an amazing amount of money pouring in. I don't know why, and I don't think it's working.
No, I don't think it's working either, and that's what I mean. I think the market's getting numb to any of the stimulatory type monetary policy effect, and that's why I don't think you can count on the Fed, you know, stopping or halting or putting a floor at the moment, or at least a nearby floor under the market. I think the market's going to run in some rough times.
Well, thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk to you next week, and maybe, who knows, maybe we'll be up by then. You never know. Enjoy Florida. Stay out of the way of that hurricane. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's J-O-H-N at PTIsecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man.
Hello, hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She's Leica on the board. Doing well, although I got the really, really light go. Then I hear the real strong Tom go. I'm like, okay. And that's, there she goes. That's that Ukrainian ancestry, popping right through there. S&P futures down 20. NASDAQ futures down 60. Interesting morning because we've got all the issues with the clearly with the debt from the debt issues and the fact that we now have a 30-year bond that's under 2%. Never thought I'd see that. Just so everybody has a somewhat of a when I started those rates were like 12.5 and now they're under 2. I mean it's absolutely scary, and we have, I think, a lot of problems that have not been addressed and all of a sudden are coming to a head, and we've got people in the government fighting. We've got the president fighting with the Fed, and everybody's trying to point blame instead of trying to really do anything. And yet, if you look at really any of the statistics coming out of, really, even before 2009, any of the statistics coming out of... Hey, David, how are you? You might be ready, but he's not with us.
Hello, I'm here.
There you are. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I'm glad you showed because I was going to give this quiz to Matt Weber, but since he's not old enough, he'd be fairly useless. So I'm going to quiz him.
But I look at charts. I don't, remember historical facts unless I do.
Well, this has to do with Woodstock, where you were only 30 then.
I don't think I was 30.
I wanted to talk to you this morning because of this. Somebody's one of this chart pattern these guys are talking about on this megaphone, or what do they call this big, huge thing? Looks like a megaphone pattern. They claim
it's baloney.
That's what I thought you'd say.
It's first of all, the talking heads. I mean, it's just weird. Not every single 60% of what they see are wedges. Rising wedges or falling wedges. So they see these rising wedges coming off of a bottom. A rising wedge, by definition, any classic technical textbook will show you that they're reversal formations. So you can't, if it's a rising wedge, it has to be, from a top, and the eventual breakout is to the downside. That's number one. So they use them all in the wrong context. I've maybe 1 out of 10 technicians on CNBC, and I'll face off with them anytime at any venue that they want, use the wedges in the wrong category. This megaphone, where the top is broadening and the bottom is also broadening, is just, you can call it an expansion pattern, but now they have this quote-unquote rule where it touches the line 5 times, upper line or lower line, and then the breakout happens. There's no historical basis for any of that.
Well, what is it? It looks to me, what they're trying to say is, if you look at a trading range, like what you talk about all the time.
And that's what it is.
Well, but they're saying because of the volatility, maybe even intraday, the trading range itself keeps getting wider and wider, even though it's still a range, is really what they're saying, that that's an interesting pattern that sometimes preaches down, but then again, sometimes preaches up, whatever. But I mean, it does seem a little. I think the pattern is correct, that we are getting, the range keeps getting wider and wider because I don't know if it's a market fabric. I mean, we're clicking 50 spoos like it's nothing now. I mean, it's which is
yeah.
Which
so,
is
yeah. The I mean, if they were to take or I or anyone would take what they call average true range. I don't know if you've heard of that, ATR. Average true range is a historical average, and then it still is based on a moving average of number of days that you make the examination, and look at the average true range of, you know, and typically you'll take a certain number of standard deviations and throw those out, and then average the true range and say, okay, this is what the market's doing, and this is outside historical standard deviations. This is inside and is valid, or take two standard deviations from the mean. Then you absolutely have something. But with these lines that they come up with, half of which either miss or violate by a little bit, and then come up with, oh, geez, five is the number, and after that, whatever the direction is, that has to be the eventual breakout. I've been looking at charts for more than 40 years. I've never seen any basis for any of that.
Did you see this thought from the day from Newt Rackney?
No, I'm not that old either.
The only qualification for alignment is to be big and dumb. To be a back, you only have to be dumb.
What we used to say on the floor was, the only thing that makes you, the only necessities to be a technician, not a good technician, but a technician, is a pencil and a ruler.
Well, isn't that the truth? All right, so I'm going to quiz you here since we have a minute, since everybody's talking about the 50 years since Woodstock. Who's the highest paid performer at Woodstock?
God, I did know this. I actually knew this because I saw a documentary on it. I'm going to guess, totally guess, Jimi Hendrix.
Correct. Good ding.
Really?
Ding. Yeah. 18 grand.
I saw it probably, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago.
Who's number two?
That I don't know. No idea.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears, 15. They had a bunch of hits after that, but they also had hits before. Third, I would not have guessed this, because I saw these guys, and they were good, but they weren't the best. Creedence Clearwater and Joan Baez at 10 grand each.
You know, they're still playing a ton of Creedence
oh, God.
Songs.
Yeah.
Still.
I saw. You're never going to guess where I saw those guys.
No.
The International Amphitheater.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That goes back a little ways.
I saw Santana there as well. Fourth on the list, Jefferson Airplane, The Band, and Janis Joplin, $7,500 each. And they dropped down to $6,000 to $7,000 for Richie Havens, Sly and the Family Stone, Canned Heat, and The Who. The Who was like way down on the list.
World famous.
Yeah, yeah. Canned Heat, I thought their rendition of Woodstock, If On the Road Again, is about as good as you can get, but.
Yeah.
I
used to be a huge fan of Richie Havens. I actually saw him live at and he was up at the top, and for whatever reason there was one venue that he liked in Evanston, a really tiny club. They couldn't have had more than, I don't know, 50, 60 people, and that filled the place, so it was really tiny. And I saw him at this little venue, and he sang without a break for 2 hours.
Wow.
It was wonderful. And I mean, even then, I mean, it was like $5 or some kind of thing to see him. It was ridiculous.
But here, talking about down the pecking order, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and Arlo Guthrie, $5,000.
Oh, wow.
The Grateful Dead, $2,500. And I thought one of the best acts there, $750, guess who? Santana.
No idea.
Santana, $750. Who? Wow.
Yeah.
Joe Cocker, $1,375. Who else was way down on the list here? Mountain, $2,000. Was that Felix Pepliardi, Mountain? Country Joe and the Fish, I thought they were terrible, $2,500. 10 years after, I was never a big fan, $3,200. Johnny Winter, $3,700. Ravi Shankar, remember him? $4,500.
Oh, yeah, I do.
So there was the list. That's wild that some of those guys went. The Eagles weren't even there, were they? I don't think so.
The Eagles, I could tell you stories about that. My pledge son, I won't name a name, but he's very, very famous. He's won all kinds of awards or whatever. He was valedictorian at Decatur High School. He was literally, I'm not kidding around, in college, like 4'11", 5 feet tall. And, you know, he was a good-looking guy, but he was just teeny tiny and brilliant like no tomorrow. And he got into the wrong crowd with drugs and this and that and the other. I can remember pounding on his door to get him up for finals, and he wouldn't go. And he started managing local group at Champaign, REO Speedwagon, that went on to become a big, big band. But he didn't drop out, but I'm not positive, but I don't believe he ever actually graduated. And it wasn't because he was a flunky. He just got in with the wrong crowd and just said, I like music better than I like school, and I'm just going to manage bands, and that's it. Well, he went on to be beyond famous. I mean, beyond famous. Like, who am I thinking of? Not Crosby, Stills, and Nash, but a band like that.
Oh, like almost like the Grateful Dead or somebody?
No. No, they sing that kind of music. Oh. That, I mean, they're still recording. But whatever, movies and television productions or whatever. Literally, he went on to be one of the biggest producers and managers of bands in the history of rock and roll and movies, for that matter. He's worth well in excess of $1 billion. Well, that was my pledge, son.
Really? They talk about Neil Young has $65 million. Is it Arlo Guthrie played a short set and he didn't play his 18-minute-long anti-establishment saga at Ellis's Restaurant, which everybody thought he would. Because here's the quote of the whole article. This is the Grateful Dead, 2500. They played by the rain poured down, and they consisted, their set was only 5 songs, and it was a disaster. Get a load of this. Bob Weir told them, well, the stage was wet. The electricity was coming through me. I was conducting. Touching my guitar and the microphone was nearly fatal. It was probably the worst set we've ever performed. Yet performing in front of a crowd that size was not altogether a fulfilling experience. He said the electricity was going through him from the guitar to the mic.
Crazy.
How bad is that?
I just looked up his biography. It wasn't Decatur. It was Danville High School. And Dan Fogelberg he's actually now the he was influential in securing approval for Live Nation's merger with Ticketmaster, and he's executive chairman of Live Nation.
So who did demand upfront payment though? Some of the other guys didn't get paid at all. If they didn't demand upfront payment.
Yeah, I don't know.
Peter Townsend and Roger Daltrey are now worth $85 million and $105 million, respectively.
Wow.
So when are we going to, other than going up and going down here, David, and I know I'm not supposed to look at this, but I'm stunned at the money supply growth in the 9.6% range over the last 3 to 4 months. Whatever the president is accusing the Fed of doing, they're pouring more money in than I've ever seen. They're doing exactly what I don't think he cares what people are actually
I'm
doing.
I'm not he sure just, he knows.
Knows what cares. That's going to be. He needs a villain if the economy goes down, and Powell's the villain. It doesn't matter if Powell doubles the money supply tomorrow, and the rates go to.
Yeah, if for whatever reason, I mean, everyone, including myself, believes that when the campaign really, you know, gets going, that he'll either back off, or if nothing else, there'll be some kind of a skeletal, lukewarm, you know, deal with China to, you know, boost them and boost us and make everything look rosy and, oh, I achieved the greatest deal of all time and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if nothing else, he might even, you know, attack automakers in Europe and whatever and slap their wrists a little bit and, oh, aren't I great? So I still believe that. But if for whatever reason that doesn't come to fore, then he, like you said, he needs a scapegoat, he needs a villain, and oh, they tightened, you know, in quantitative tightening, and, you know, they shouldn't have raised, and they didn't lower enough, and oh, this, and oh, that, and they caused the economy to slow down despite my pleadings.
Well,
it won't work, but that's what he's going to try.
I'm very concerned economically, David, this is my economic background, that whenever you have one of these policies that don't have a whole hell of a lot of sense to them in the first place, in my mind, because I think what I always look at and what was drilled into me by the guys at the University of Chicago and some of the guys at Notre Dame was that whatever you do, there's always another side of the coin. I mean, whatever, you know, I mean, I still remember to this day Milton Friedman's take-home exam, and then you went in there and had a, this was all essay, but it would be, was the world's easiest sort of thing. It would be like a lob of Time magazine out there. What if we did like this policy? You know, whatever the simple policy might be, we're gonna freeze gas prices, or we're gonna do this, or we're gonna do that. And the essay would be take it through the top. Who's affected, why, and every walk of life, stock flow, you name it. And every one of these things, you didn't get to be a genius at it. I mean, because obviously I'm not, but you got a respect for how complicated it all is. And if you go too far, all you do is create discontinuities. I mean, if you have interest rates.
And a lot of those don't come back. I mean, we've talked so much about, you know, outsourcing, you know, or moving these factories and whatever. And I mean, it's real. I mean, I can't tell you if it's 5% of what was there or 3% or 30%. I have no idea. But when you change your supply chain, you know, to wherever, whether it's, you know, India or South Korea or Thailand or Vietnam, you know, it doesn't come back.
Well, I agree with you, but I also, the thing that's somewhat underappreciated, and maybe it's because the particular spot I was, I mean, I know you went to Indiana and a lot of other people went to other places. The one thing the University of Chicago focused on, and that's why I'm always hung up on this, is because that's what I got to listen to all day.
It's a great school. You don't have to apologize.
What I'm saying is they focused on the money piece. And right. We've broken the way the money works. People have money, they can't get paid for it. You know, and I'm not talking about stock. I'm talking about people using your money to build a building, to build a car plant, whatever it is. You're supposed to get paid for that, and you're not, which is a total discontinuity. Because then you're taking the savers, and you're saying you guys are just taking one for the team for like a decade. Okay, well, that's kind of a long
time. Maybe two decades.
That's kind of a while. But now, okay, what do those guys do with that money? Well, we're gonna make it cheap for Microsoft to buy stock back. Okay, but we're gonna make it really hard for somebody to get to, these guys are not putting a roof on their house, they're not putting windows in, they're not buying a new house, they're not buying a new car. So we're making it hard for the roofers, we're making it hard for the window guys, we're making it hard for the car people. Right? Because that money that would go to those savers normally would go to those kinds of things. Because the thing, I guess what I'm saying is what I learned is you can't ever do one thing. I mean, what are you really doing when you tax people and spend? Keynesian. Well, you're saying you're borrowing money from David or Maddie Weber, and you're taking the money, and now they don't have it. They have a note, and you've got the money, and you're spending it instead of them. But now, are you really spending more? Are you spending more wisely? I mean, if it's wartime, you know you have to do that. But other times, what are you doing with it? Are you pissing it away? Are you building a bridge that all of a sudden, 40 years from now, is still going to be an amazing conduit of prosperity from one area to the next, in which case you get, you know, returns 100 times over? Or are you letting the old bridge fall in a river and you're just putting the old bridge back up and all you had is the same damn bridge you had before? I mean, there's a million...
And that argument extends. I mean, I never really thought of it that much in that context, but that argument is big time, I think, in relationship to stock buybacks.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So it's a question of where...
I mean, if you're allowing Apple to borrow at, you know, whatever rate, you know, and issue 30 or 50 or 100-year bonds, even though they have, you know, $145 billion in unused cash, you know, to jack up the price, the folks that benefit from jacking up the price, you know, are they going to be as productive from an economic standpoint in utilizing the funds? Well, first of all, they won't get it unless they cash out. Are they going to spread the multiple, you know, throughout the economy to expand rather than, like you said, the bricklayer who's building a house or a building or a commercial establishment and deserves to make a profit?
Well, I guess one of the things becoming of the behavioral stuff that I learned, it's almost like it's like running a marathon and, or having a beer party. I mean, when you talk about cash, I say, Renault, what could possibly be? When I was very young and I used to jog a little bit, people never even, you ran around and ran 5-6 miles, or maybe some guys did 10. I never did. I did once. And you wouldn't even take a drink. David, you go to a softball game. You play 2-3 games all day long, and there was no bottled water. You went to the concrete thing in the park and every few innings, and you took a swig. I mean, and then all of a sudden people said, boy, you know, you really need to hydrate a little more. Of course, now everybody's fatter than they were back then, but not everybody, but a lot of people are. So then you say, okay, now you got to hydrate yourself. And all of a sudden that group comes in, and they carry the day. And all of a sudden you start reading about people drank so much during a marathon that people are dying because they drank too much, right? You know, so many, but it's like you have 20 people over watching a game and there's not enough beer, and somebody hits the door with 3 cases, and hey, Joe's here. Let's congratulate Joe. Let's drink his 3 cases. And all of a sudden the game's over. The second game's over. He's kind of passed out, and somebody walks in with 40 cases. You go, hey, there's not even room in the apartment for him. Get it the hell out of here. I mean, but you reach the end of this. And right now, I think at some point, if the Fed, every time now, the reaction has been when the market started to go down, you put more money in, and the asset prices and the market goes right back up. But it seems like they've had to do more and more to get it to go less and less in the last few years. Now you see them pouring in this amount, and we're not going anywhere. And when you run to the end of this chain, it's not a good scene. I've seen it too many times. Not too many. I've read about it, too. I haven't seen it that many times. It's not a good scene.
And this is beyond seasonal.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was just seasonal, if we were having, you know, our August, September to mid-October drawdown, and, you know, then the mid-October to mid-January, the market flies up. But, you know, we didn't have it last year. You know, we had the worst fourth quarter and who knows how long, worst December in 80 years. And literally, you go back to the calendar, 19 months, the S&P 500 is within 1% of being unchanged.
Right, right.
So, I mean, this is lasting. This isn't seasonal.
Because right now, if you'll constantly hear people being, I'm going to say, disingenuous without being. I mean, how can I even say that? The thing that always, the one statement, David, that I thought was the most dramatically good statement ever was Sammy Sosa's statement in front of Congress. I did not break the laws of the U.S. or Dominican Republic, and I never had steroid shots. Never once said he didn't take steroid. He just said he didn't take it. And he just said he didn't like needles, basically. And he didn't take them in the U.S. or Dominican Republic. Maybe he was on the plane from one to the other. I don't know. But, I mean, right now, I just see this, guys will say, the market is up this percentage this year. You can't afford to take your money out. But you're right. If you look at 12 months, we're unchanged.
19 months.
19 months. Well, 12 months, we're unchanged.
19 months back to January of 2018.
And I don't know if you were listening last week, I actually went to the A1 labor thing. And this year, there's people, all they do is point to that $250,000 a month. They don't talk about the $70,000 a month before. But if you look at the year up until now, we got another report this Friday. For the year, we're up 300,000 jobs. We've taken 300,000 people out of the unemployed column and put them in the whatever you want to call them other people column. So it's been the quietest, slowest labor accumulation month in probably 6 or 7. Right. And yet everybody, if you listen to people, you'd swear people are that they're coming in and kidnapping you for a job to get another one. And it's just not the case. There's movement on the low end like there always is lately. I mean, yeah, if you want to work for $10, there's 15 people fighting for you. If you're looking for 12 or 13 or 14, not so many people fighting for you, right?
Right.
I mean, you really do
well,
have
Well, I think it's the barbell, too. I think that there's plenty open at the very highest end, too. I mean, you come out, you know, in our industry with, you know, 22 designations and, you know, whatever. They want you as, you know, vice president of finance and, you know, Morgan Stanley or whatever for nice six figures. But if you're in the middle, you can just forget it.
Right, and Morgan Stanley will be, if you're the right person, they're after you, but they're probably laying off in total.
No question.
And you wonder at the end of the day, all these people in our industry that got laid off, is the industry better or worse? And I'm going to say, look at these fluctuations in the market. I'm saying the markets aren't as good as they were 25 years ago. You know, I don't know how I can prove that, but It's hard
for
someone.
Can. You can, because you can take the daily volume and calculate. There's ways to calculate how much of it is driven by algos. And that makes, I think, for, you know, when they keep pushing the rallies and keep pushing the brakes, and then the market does snap back to where, you know, it is, quote unquote, at least a semi-efficient price, then that, to me, is not a good market. When you go an extra percent or two beyond what everybody and their brother knows is the correct price, and then snaps back in the last 30 minutes of the day, it's not a real good market.
Well, I'm going to say that there's, if you were to count the amount of the amount of standing orders and everything, have got to be way less. However, the S&P is coming back a little bit, rolling out 17.25. As the futures down 51, be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
play Stocks and Jocks. Don't time out. So Matt Weber on the board with his hench girl over there, Leica, doing a good job. First day actually on the board, so see how she does. So far, so good. SP Futures up, not only down 15.75, so we're rallying here a little bit. NASDAQ Futures down 42. Dow Futures down 220. Individual stocks of the Dow moving. We got Boeing down $8. We got Apple down $1.99. They were both down a little bit more in a little while ago. Boeing, I think, is down because United Airlines is pretty much thrown in the towel on the 737s to lease December 19th, which is kind of longer than most people thought. And who knows if they'll make that number, but that's at least where they are. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 42.4%, FTSE down 17.2%, CAC around down 26.5%, so moderately to the downside. Nikkei up 4, call that flat. Shanghai up 6, call that flat. Hang Seng down 98.4%. Again, the big numbers. 10-year is 1.49 to 30-year is under 2%, which I swore I'd never see. But one minus 0.72, so still going lower and then, or further into negative territory, would be the more accurate way to say that. Japan down negative 1.27. UK 10-year 0.38. We've got oil down $1.33, 53.77, so not much going on the oil patch to the good side. Brent down 93. That spread is $3.15, which is about as low as, in fact, as low as I've ever seen it. So natural gas, 231. Maybe it was a buy down under 220, as David mentioned last week. ArtBob, $1.45. Wow. So fill up the jalopy. We've got gold up $13, 1543. Silver up 31 cents, 1866. Again, silver remains a trade. Copper, wrong way though, another 6 cents to the downside. So if you're a copper guy saying that raising copper prices are good for the world, it ain't happening. Whichever one of you guys doing traffic weather sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic volume starting to build due to the time of morning, but also due to the weather in the area. We have all kinds of thunderstorms that are increasing travel times and will continue to do so throughout the morning rush, so keep that in mind. We had an earlier crash on the Kennedy inbound side at Foster Avenue. That crash is now clear, but the Kennedy is moving very slowly in both directions. A lot of red on the map, and that's affecting the Edens as well. Eisenhower has a significant traffic build up at 2 coming in on I-290, so keep that in mind. Stevenson and Southside Expressways overall, though, aren't too bad on a Tuesday morning. Suburban tollways have been quiet. No accidents or issues to report. But just keep in mind, we do have severe thunderstorms throughout the area, and that will continue all morning long. We'll reach a high of 85 and should have some intermittent sunshine today, but high humidity and high temperatures and then rain throughout the day, especially this morning. Right now it's rainy and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 110 today. Right now it's clear and 88. In sports, Cubs beat the Mariners 5-1 yesterday afternoon at Wrigley, snapping their two-game skid. They're still 3 games behind St. Louis, who continues to win. Cardinals have won 10 out of 12. White Sox were blown out by the Indians 11-3. Diamondbacks doubled up the Padres 14-7. Diamondbacks are 3.5 games behind the Cubs for that second wild card spot. Lastly, college football is underway, and the Irish opened up their season last night, blowing out Louisville 35-17. Chief.
So have you managed to weasel your way into some kind of skybox Thursday night?
No, but if anyone out there has an extra skybox ticket, I would love to go.
Do you got to bring the girlfriend? Are you guys going running as an entry these days?
Ideally, yes, because she wouldn't be happy if I was in the skybox at the Bear game and she didn't get to come.
Now, if it's a regular seat with the grid and wash, she's happy to stay home.
No, I think she'd when the weather's nice like this, I think she'd be fine and would want to go. If it's cold out, I don't want to go. So there you go.
The ladies can, they're not real happy sometime when it's like 5 degrees or something.
No, I stopped going to sporting events in bad weather about 10 years ago, and I haven't looked back.
I stopped going to them in bad weather when I almost stopped going to them in good weather because they're so friggin' long.
Yeah, you don't even like them in good weather.
No, it's a 2.5 hour. All these games are 2.5 hour games and 3.5 hour time slots now.
Well, college football is the worst. College football is like 4 hours. NFL is about 3 hours and 10 minutes. Baseball is 3 hours plus. College basketball is the one true game where it's 2 hours every time.
I went to the one Cub game in the last Weber year. I went with one of my clients, a good friend from the Fed. And I did. We're not in our front row seats. So I wasn't used to having my knees up against the chair in front of us. 3.5 hours. It was cold, but I didn't care. Cold, it was okay. But the knees and my chin for that length of time was like, this is bad.
No, that's rough.
And it's kind of one of those things. David, hey.
I wanted to segue back if we have 1 minute.
Yes.
My pledged son, after REO Speedwagon, managed, developed, produced, and literally pushed the Eagles.
Wow.
That was the group I was looking for, the Eagles, to, you know, all-star fame forever. Later managed Bon Jovi, Journey, Meghan Trainor, Gwen Stefani, amongst others.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, the Eagles, they got to be the highest selling. Wow.
They're one of the highest selling bands of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're,
exactly.
I mean,
that was my pledge, son, and I couldn't get him out of bed to go to finals.
God.
And one other thing, market-related, copper, you mentioned copper, and it is really, really at a significant point. 245 to 247 is, like, absolute key. And I think the overnight low in the September contract, they're going to switch over to December as top step. But in the front month, September, 246.75, I think, is the low. You take out 245 on 2 days' close, you're going to 190.
Wow.
And all the oscillators are grossly extended downside. And I'm not making a case to try and pick a bottom or go get, you know, FCX, Freeport McMoRan. Not a fan, don't own any shares. But for any copper lovers, it better hold here or it's lights out.
Well, we have a carryover position in FCX for my discretionary traders, and we're seriously short FCX this morning. It's down a quarter, so if it stays there, it'll be a good morning. Then we might turn around and long it again.
Well, if it goes through 245, it's going to be a better morning for you.
Well, that would be nice. Hey, I got a question for you, David. You and I, I think maybe more than most, Kenny does as well, too. We try and put names and faces on the numbers, which I think makes us different than most people. It doesn't make us better, right? It just makes us different. I saw these numbers coming out Friday, and the personal income numbers were supposed to be 0.3, and it came in 0.1, which really sucks, by the way.
Right.
Previous month, 0.5. So I don't know how that works, how you get spread there. But consumer spending was supposed to be 0.6, and it came in 0.6. So you might ask yourself, okay, how the hell does that happen? Why does the income number be horrible, the spending number pretty robust? So I started asking around, and I picked like 3 or 4 people of, like I usually do, of various walks of life. One of the guys you know is because he works in the building. One of them happens to be an attorney friend of mine. And then there were a couple other people. And I said, okay, what? They all had kids. Now, I don't have any kids, and your kids are long grown. So we're not as attuned to this as most, but I've been hearing anecdotally about when kids are going back to school, what the requirements are of a lot of these places. And it's not just show up, like when you and I were in school, you know.
When we did show up.
Yeah, well, nobody didn't go to Grant. I tell you what, you showed up at Marist. It was like an armed camp, that place. you didn't want to be wandering around the neighborhood grammar school either, because all the mothers were had their eye out for you. They just call yours, which wouldn't be a good day. So anyway, having said all that, but now I'm listening to these guys, and so I said to one guy who works in the building, and I said, "What? Your daughter went back to, I think she's maybe in 8th grade, Catholic school in the neighborhood, and not in Pilsen, but south of there." And because it cost me. I had to buy this, and this, and they wanted to have a tablet now, and like in 8th grade and stuff, and I go,
sure.
I go, how much did you spend, like a lot of dough? He goes, oh, yeah, well, I mean, everything, you want everything new, you want her to look halfway decent, and you want to, you know, I mean, it's your daughter, for God's sake. And the one guy, the attorney guy, says, yeah, you know, he's going to high school, you got to have all these clothes, you got to have like a uniform, you got to have a tablet, you got to have this, that, the other thing, you know, you got to pony up for books. And I said, let me ask you, is back to school now a bigger, For families in that area, not for a couple who doesn't have any kids yet, where you're buying each other presents, is back to school way more than Christmas? There's no comparison.
Huh.
I mean, in terms of what you have to, a lot of schools now requiring a laptop, for God's sake. You know, with certain specs and everything.
I mean, there's some schools that give you the laptop.
Well, okay, but then that piles on tuition.
Right.
It's like when you went to Notre Dame and somebody goes, I can't believe the football tickets are free. And I said, they're not free, they're included.
Right.
there is a difference, right? I mean, anyway, what I'm saying is, if you take this little bit of knowledge and you look at these numbers, they all of a sudden are somewhat explainable, and it probably tells you that 0.5% went on a credit card. The difference.
Yeah, I mean, and that was going to be my answer. Just check, you know, personal loans and check monthly consumer credit figures. That's where it has to be. If the numbers are accurate and balanced, that's where the number is.
Well, and I'm saying there's probably some monthly issues that probably...
I mean, and I think it's been running. I mean, I don't closely monitor those, but, you know, consumer credit, and, you know, I'm not sure exactly how they tabulate that or plug in seasonal factors or whatever, but I think it's roughly like $16 billion a month additional. So, I mean, it's man, hey, just look at the chart of MasterCard or, you know, Visa or any of these others, Paycom. I mean, they're just nonstop.
Well, if you take the amount of, this has gone on really since, there might have been a couple times since 2008. If you take the amount, the percentage of the economy that the government is the debt is increasing. Okay, if we're a trillion in a hole every year, that's what? 4.8% of the economy?
Right, it's like 22, 23 trillion.
All right, so say it's even 4%. Well, we've never grown more than 4%. So if you take away the borrowed money from the federal government, I think you got a negative.
No question.
And it's not, I'm not criticizing David. You know, I'm not pulling out my gun, which is a bad thing after this weekend in Texas to even say that, but I'm not pulling out my water balloon and pointing it at the president or anybody. But if you don't look at the numbers, if you don't understand them, how do you make policy? And if you let yourself be, quote, I guess I'll use an old term, hoodwinked by the numbers, by thinking things are good when they aren't, and those types of things, or thinking things are bad when they're not, your policy has to be amazingly flawed because you're starting at the wrong spot. It's like bringing somebody in on the old MASH show on the bus, and you start giving the guy paddles on his heart, and the guy goes, "Wait a minute, I got a broken leg. What are you doing?" I mean, you got to go to the right spot, and I don't know that.
But I don't, and I mean, hey, I'm no fan of Trump. I didn't vote for or against him, as typical. But I always vote independent. But it has nothing really to do with him. These politicians, the way it looks to me politically is, and that's why I tend to stay away from the arena, is that the vast, vast, vast majority of them don't care. They look at the numbers they want to look at. If they want to be negative, if they're in the opposing party, they just look at the negative ones. They're in power and, you know, in majority, then they look at the positive numbers. They ignore the rest. And those that are really trying to do a good job for the electorate, they retire early. They're forced to.
Yeah, they're rather early. And you look at what used to be, well, who knows? I mean, you go back in history, we've had some pretty wacky congresses and some fights and all kinds of stuff. So it's not like this has been a smooth deal for 200 and some years.
But
you know, you have a president that says, "Well, I'm going to look at the stock market, and I'm going to look at some labor numbers,
And just the number you're talking about. He's going to not look at personal income. He's going to look at personal spending.
Right.
We got a great, strong consumer, and that's the backbone of the economy, and aren't we doing great? And think if Powell would have lowered rates, you know, like I told him to, you know, 100 basis points at a time, we'd be a rocket ship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're... Hey, you could say the same thing.
Well, right.
So I mean, could I.
Right.
Anyone could.
But the thing of it is, though, David, these numbers are starting to form such a pattern here, I think, in a lot of places. And they've been this way for... It's not like it's the first quarter. They've been this way for like 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean the growth of debt is what's pushing us forward, and I don't think it's pushing us forward enough. I mean that's the hardest thing on earth.
How long ago did you and I talk about, and that not just once, many, many times, you know, I do my focus stocks each week and you know, it's Investors Business Daily, giving credit, top 50 stocks, and you know, I use some various parameters to cut down the list, and then one of the big ones is if their debt, you know, to equity ratio is over 100%, more than one time, I don't, you know, use them or rank them or look at anything else. To me, they're out. And the list kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller, mainly because of the debt equity ratio. It went from 50 to 40 to now it's, you know, less than 25, less than half qualify, mainly because the debt equity ratios are so high. I saw expansion happening in a matter of months, 4, 5, 6 years ago that we touted on this show, you know, that we're getting out of hand, and they've continued to grow without stop.
Well, what, you would hope that, the all these companies, what do you think the end game is?
I guess from what I hear on TV and you know, that's, you know, here or there, one out of ten talking heads will have something to say that you perk up and listen to. And I think it ends when you know, HYG, you know, the high yield debt collapses. When you shut off debt, then when you shut off credit, that's when the economy, you know, readjusts. And that readjustment is, you know, recession, either mild or deep.
Well, you know, it is interesting when
that thing breaks. I mean, that's the few people that I respect that I listen to. When HYG busts, that's it.
Well, how connected, I guess the question is, I was on, I was on a Joan Esposito show the other day, and I think I ruined her day by when she said she had no debt and neither did I. I said, well, that was nice of you to say that. But by the way, we owe, each of us owes the federal government like $180,000 because we're taxpayers. And a lot of people just, and she's a very bright lady. She goes, I never really thought of it that way. And I said, well, who do you think owns this stuff? I mean, you've seen it happen in the city right and left. I mean, we're talking about when Rahm Emanuel came into office. I don't know if, maybe you can remember this, David. I'm going to say he said we had a close to $1 billion deficit when he came into office. Might have been $500 million, $600 million, so.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I'm sure you're right.
Well, what I'm saying is the first 4 years he was in, they increased fees all over the place. That I actually read an article once where, who knows if the guy's right or a lady, that it was the equivalent of a 45% tax increase in terms of revenue.
Incredible.
Red light cameras, parking tickets, parking meters, you know, you name it. Fees for water went way up. You're paying, what, $250 a month for the garbage you didn't have. All that stuff essentially equated to about a 45% tax increase. And then his second term, they essentially raised the taxes, what, like 50%? I mean, it's something along that line. So essentially in his 8 years, the taxes have doubled. Roughly. You know, I mean, I'm off by a few shekels here and there. And yet, Lori Lightfoot comes in, the deficit's $950 billion. It hasn't changed.
Right.
It'd be different if she came in and said, well, everybody basically got these taxes up to, you know, upward of sun don't shine, but at least now we're flat. No, they haven't moved. So Rahm must have told us it was wherever he told us was when it really was one plus what he told us was. Now the question is she telling the truth? Is the real number 900 million or is it 2.5 billion? I mean, is she going to raise, now she's talking about raising taxes again. So if she raises them a billion, 4 years from now, if whoever the new mayor is, or it could be her again, which we're still a billion, this number, I feel like I'm the greyhound chasing the dog. It's pulling by the truck. You know, I mean, I can't.
And so if you extrapolate that from a municipality to the corporate, you got a pretty clear picture of what's going on.
Well, and I don't know what, we're so intertwined. Anyway, what Joan asked me was, China's debt is nowhere near as much as ours. And I said, you know, they have quite a bit. I don't know. Let me look it up. And so I spent, you know, an hour digging through stuff after the show, and I sent her an email. If you go into, like, Wikipedia and some places, it looks like, on a GDP basis, their debt is about half of ours. Because our deficit is, our debt is, what, $22 billion, and our GDP is $21 billion. So we're roughly...
Trillion.
Trillion. Yeah, 1-to-1. Now, they're... Their GDP is like $7.5 trillion, and their debt is pushing $4.5 trillion. So it's roughly half of ours.
Right.
And then they say, "Well, wait a minute. But if you add in the sovereign debt, or the sovereign debt, the state debt that, you know, that doesn't pile in. I don't know about our states. What that's another like 3.5. So they're sort of right back up to the number that sort of we are, like 1-to-1,
right,
roughly. And then if you add in the $3 trillion that they have dollar and European denominated debt, which doesn't run through their system at all, now you're somewhere even to us, as bad or worse. Because I don't know what you do if you add our state stuff back in. So you're at the end of the day, it's probably fairly close to being as abysmal as ours.
And now, just going a little bit further, now you go to the number three economy in the world, Japan, and yeah, what is their multiple? 1.5, 1.8?
Yeah, yeah. They're, I think they're pushing
so two. The top three are multiples of their GDP.
Yeah, I mean,
with Japan being the worst, and either us or China is second worst.
I'm going to say that if you added the state in here, like they were trying to do in China, they were probably a little worse. Japan's by far the worst. I think Japan's double. I think it's double.
Yeah, I said about 1.8.
Yeah, I think it's over two actually. But so yeah, I don't know what happens when where's the first canary? I think it might be the dollar denominated debt out of China. Because if the yuan, I don't want to even have to explain this, which was the first canary. I never wanted to see this happen. But if the yuan keeps going down, it means that every month those people need more money to make their interest payments they need to make in dollars and euro dollars, right? So that gets more and more egregious on those people, essentially by the month. If the currency for just that reason, not the other reasons, that if the economy slows down, you're having trouble anyway. Now I'm guessing if it sort of starts there, David. I don't know who on this end has this $3 trillion worth of debt. I mean, I don't really know a whole lot of people that could lend, $20 million to China on their own. But obviously some banks here, some hedge funds, some people have. I doubt if the pension funds have.
To me, it's like an unending chain letter until the chain letter ends.
Yeah,
when,
I mean,
when the weakest hands say, I give up, and then it filters up to the top end, or somebody bails at the top, likewise, then the chain letter ends. Otherwise, you just keep sending it to the next hands that are willing to take on the debt.
Well, the reason why that comes to me, and that may be a third world place, is that both China and the U.S. government, if it's David Adelman Life Insurance Company, and you've got, $50 billion that you're trying to find someplace to... I wouldn't surprise me, David, if out of your $50 billion, you lobbed $100 million at some construction firm in China. I mean, it was paying a little more than here. You're going to say, hey, it's some small percentage of the thing or whatever. Now, if all of a sudden you don't get paid back, I'm going to say that the China government is not going to care, and neither is ours. So when I say that might be the canary, that's the one kind of debt that nobody's going to – you can't go to Trump and say, I need this money back. Where if it was from a Citigroup, you'd get it back maybe. Or you're not going to go to the Chinese government. The guy said, the reason why it was dollar denominated is because we didn't want it. We told them they were up against their limit, and they went to you, and you said, okay, it's your problem, not ours. So that's the one spot where every elected official worldwide can say, not my problem.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just, trying to combine the economics and the politics of it, which, I don't know if that's what you should do or not. And again, I hope we never go there, but I don't see anything on anybody's part where they say we're going to try and fix this. That somebody's going to come into office and say in 4 years this is going to be better. They're not even talking about it, David. Anyway, David, we'll talk to you later in a week, buddy. S&P futures down 18, NASDAQ futures down 45. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. Maybe we'll bounce back here.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.